May it please the court, I'm Mark Elliott, number 16845, on behalf of the appellant in this case, Jane Baldwin, who's here today in court with me. The gist of my argument is that this case was decided a long time ago. 1941, the statute that we're going to be construing today was put into place. It hasn't fundamentally changed since it was put in. And in 1961, the Supreme Court in the employer's liability construed this statute to determine whether or not the statute could be read to require that a claimant who's leaving the state of Colorado would have to be their initial departure from the state that would trigger the extraterritorial jurisdiction protection of the statute. The court answered that question very simply right at the end of the opinion by saying, we would have to read the plain language, we'd have to read the word first into the plain language of the statute to come to that conclusion. It's not there, we're not going to read it in there, and we're asking you not to read it in there today. This is a plain language case. The primary task of a court when they're trying to give effect to the legislative intent and the policy of the General Assembly is to look at the first is the plain language of the statute. It gives the language explaining ordinary meanings, and simple language with clear meanings should be construed in accordance with that simple language. So, 841-204, that's the statute we're here today to talk about. It's two sentences that matter. The first sentence is a broad grant of jurisdiction for employees who have been hired or regularly employed in the state of Colorado, they're protected if they're injured outside the state. That's the broad grant sentence. Sentence two is a limiting provision on the broad grant that says it shall apply only to injuries received by the employee within 6 months after leaving the state. And that's what, in essence, the gist of this, the focus of this argument is on the six-month requirement.
Elliott, before we get to your, I understand where the focus of your argument is going, but just so I understand your argument regarding the first sentence, are you contesting the ALJ's finding that Ms. Baldwin was not performing substantial employment in Colorado at the time of the injury?
What the ALJ determined was there wasn't any regular employment in Colorado, but that was a point that we conceded at the hearing before it even started.
Okay.
We were never claiming that this was a regularly employed in Colorado case. It would have been before 2006, but it certainly wasn't after. It was a hired in Colorado case. The statute is the disjunctive. So that issue was really never even reached by the judge because we conceded that we weren't claiming regular employment or regularly employed in Colorado. With respect to hired in Colorado, which you still have to reach because the judge and I think the ICDO made a mistake in applying the undisputed facts to the law, they decided that the record supported the idea that this claimant was hired outside of Colorado. I don't think there's any support for that. I think the undisputed facts with the application of clear law, the clear law of the area shows that she was hired in Colorado. We'll stand on a brief with respect to the period, the original contract in 98. There's just no doubt about it there. And there, it frankly, is no doubt about it in 2006. The last act necessary to form a contract is acceptance by the claimant of the offer from the employer. So even if there's a new contract.
Pardon me, counsel, I hate to interrupt you, but somebody's got an electronic device that is disturbing our recording machine. Can you please turn it off? Thank you.
You may continue.
It's the last act necessary. And Ms. Baldwin's acceptance of the offer from Air Wisconsin by faxing her bid from Colorado was the acceptance, even if that's a new contract. Or under the alternative theory that it was somehow important to the contract whether she elects to be a commuter or to move her domicile. When she elects to be a commuter, she also does that from the state of Colorado. Contract of hire under basic contract principles was entered into and finalized by Ms. Baldwin accepting that contract in
Was there anything more in the record that isn't reflected in the ALJ's findings as to whether once she sent in this bid preference, it was a done deal? I mean, she was hired, she was employed.
Well, actually, what the evidence in the record says, she was
never
lost her employment. But even if you view it as a new contract, the answer is yes. That she accepted the contract. The only other argument that the Air Wisconsin attorney has made is that, well, there's this additional requirement where they have to choose whether or not they're going to be have a new domicile or whether they're going to commute. But even in that context, she made that election for Colorado.
Okay, how I was understanding the argument was that sitting in the bid preference was, if you will, the offer, and the airlines coming back and saying, okay, you get to go to Reagan or wherever, was the acceptance, and it was at that point that a new contract was fired. Am I missing something?
Well, the offer was that they told Ms. Baldwin that she had to submit, if she wanted to continue her employment in Wisconsin, she needed to submit this acceptance by a certain date. She did that, and the respondents have conceded that she did that in a timely fashion. So that was the acceptance.
So even though it was called a bid, it was in fact not a bid, but an acceptance?
I think that's a term of art in the airline industry for accepting a position or accepting certain shifts or something. But that's the essence of that.
Is there anything in the record that indicates that that's the case, that it's a term of art and what it means?
No, I don't think so. It didn't really come up. ICAO, when they analyzed this issue, just decided that there was a new contract form in 2006. They never addressed the issue of the place of hire the way we have in our brief. The place of hire is Colorado. So then we turn to the next element, the second sentence, and the whole employer's liability case. Again, the Supreme Court's already decided that. What we see over the years in the case law in this area is a lot of confusion and some overlap between hiring cases and regular employment cases, and the court's not making a strong distinction between that disjunctive statute. That's what we're asking you to do here. Keep in mind that this is a hired in Colorado case, not a regularly employed in Colorado case. And then you have to look at the statute with reference to the plain language, but also the purpose of the statute. The purpose of this statute was to protect, and is to protect, residents and citizens of the state of Colorado who are hurt out of state. And that's made clear by Judge Cuccarelli and Hathaway Lighting, and also by the Court of Appeals and Moorhead Machinery. And it makes sense, and it makes sense in the context of this case. And one of the reasons why we're here is because the benefits that Ms. Baldwin could not get in Virginia that she's seeking here are COBRA benefits. She had to, when she was recovering from her injury, she had to pay health insurance benefits out of her own pocket. So over $13,000 incurred. And she luckily had the resources to do that. But in the next case, that resident or citizen taxpayer from the state of Colorado may not have those same resources. They'll end up in a public hospital, end up in an emergency room in an uninsured situation, or end up on Medicaid, a state program. So the state has a clear interest in protecting its own citizens in this situation, and that's what we're asking the court to do here. The plain language of the statute is hired in Colorado, injured within 6 months of leaving the state. Is it within 6 months of first leaving the state? No. Employer's liability has already decided that question. Is there any way you could read a requirement into the statute of some kind of requirement of doing work in Colorado to reinitiate the 6 months? And the answer is, in a hired in case, no, there's no way to read that from the plain language of the statute. And the cases that talk about that are confusing hired in from regularly employed cases. Air Wisconsin raises issues about basically a kind of a minimum contacts analysis. we don't have enough connection to Colorado anymore since 2006. We don't have a base there anymore. We don't fly over Colorado. Again, it's not applicable here. They reached into the state of Colorado. They hired a resident of the state of Colorado, and that's sufficient contacts. If you look at Tatlock, which is addendum B to our opening brief at page 2, the ICL has already decided that issue by saying if someone reaches into Colorado to hire, that's all they need to establish that. And I'm going to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
All right, counsel, thank you. You have 4 minutes and 38 seconds left.
May it please the court. My name is Jessica Moran. I'm here representing Air Wisconsin and Ace American Insurance Company. I kind of want to start by giving you a little bit of the factual background in this case so you know sort of what happened. Clayton is a flight attendant with Air Wisconsin, and actually she continues to be so. She was originally employed at the Denver base of Air Wisconsin in 1998. However, that base closed in March 2006. Since that time, Klingman has actually been working out of Virginia, the Reagan International Airport in Virginia, back since April 2006. She commutes to Virginia to start her shift, so she goes to her professional domicile, which is Virginia, and commutes out of there to do her employment-related job duties of being a flight attendant. When she does this commuting, she doesn't take Air Wisconsin flights. She's not reimbursed by Air Wisconsin. Air Wisconsin doesn't operate any flights in Colorado. They don't operate any flights from Colorado. They don't have any connecting flights in Colorado. They don't fly over Colorado. They don't have any bases in Colorado. They don't do any training in Colorado. They essentially have, since April 2006, no connection to the state of Colorado. 2 years after claimant moves her professional domicile to Virginia, she gets injured in Pennsylvania. She filed a workers' compensation claim in her professional domicile.
Is there such a thing as a professional domicile? I don't think I've heard that term before.
What I understand it is that it's called when she goes to Virginia, that's her domicile. So that's my understanding based on Emily Bibb's testimony too in the record that they talk about. She's domiciled out of Virginia, so I didn't want it to be confusing as to, you know, whether it was she's personally living there or whether it was her professional domicile.
Is that a legal term of art that we need to know for some reason?
No, it's not a legal term of art. It's a domicile.
Ignore the question.
Okay. So she files a workers' compensation claim in Virginia, and actually my clients pay benefits. They pay medical benefits, they pay wage loss, they pay permanent disability benefits. After she receives all of those benefits in Virginia, she then decides to file a claim in Colorado for workers' compensation because she can get more money here. Like I said, since 2006, it's been 7 years since Air Wisconsin has had any contact with the state of Colorado. And in the last 7 years, the only contact that the claimant has had with the state of Colorado is personal contact. She lives here. There's been no employment-related job duties or anything done in the state of Colorado, with the exception of a workbook that I think we'll talk about a little bit later. But it's a workbook she chose to complete in Colorado. So
it's just a transfer, a hire, neither? How would you characterize it?
Well, I think the evidence demonstrated that ALJ found that this was actually a new contract. She was hired in 1998. I do believe she was hired in Denver, although I don't think that was specifically established by the ALJ. But once 2005 came, they sent out a notice saying your Denver base is going to close. Then she got a displacement notice in February of 2006 and said, hey, Denver base is closing. You no longer have a job at the Denver base. This is essentially what my clients say that says.
Did it? Yeah, that's what I'd like to know, what right. It actually says, because I'm still trying to understand whether in 2006
she lost her job and then was rehired, or whether she just continued in her same job title as with a flight attendant?
She did. She was still a flight attendant, but the ALJ found that it was essentially a new employment contract that was created. The bid form says, and the notice of displacement, which is a letter that was on top of the bid form, and it said, you are hereby displaced from the Denver domicile. Here's the bid form. You can bid for these other places. If you do not submit this bid form by such and such dates, we're going to assume that you resign.
Let me ask you the same question as Mr. Elliott.
Sure.
Is there anything in the record that indicates that once she submitted that bid form, mm-hmm. then she's back on the payroll, if you will? I mean, she's an Air Wisconsin employee.
Well, there were still some significant terms that needed to be determined once she submitted the bid form. So you can't just submit the bid form and, hey, yeah, okay, whatever I want, I get, you know. But then Bill Palmer, who's in Wisconsin, had to look at the bid form. She determined 1, 2, 3, you know, her preferences. He had determined based on seniority and preference of her and all the other Denver people about who gets to go where. Then she's notified where she's going to go, and then she designates herself as a commuter. And then there's a commuter policy which is in place. Now, the ALJ found that was significant enough to establish that a new employment contract occurred in 2006. And that is a factual determination that can only be overturned if there's not substantial evidence in the record. So.
Okay, and I understand that piece, right. But I'm
stuck on that. So I don't know that I have any additional factual information that was not in the record with regard to how that all came about, except for that the ALJ heard all of the evidence, made these determinations that essentially a new employment contract occurred, also made a determination that this new employment contract actually did not occur in Colorado. So Mr. Elliott discussed where the contract of hire occurred, and he talked about the last act necessary, right? So there's kind of that formula that says, okay, once you have, you know, agreement on all the terms, mutuality, they call it, and it's the last act necessary to complete the contract of hire. In this case, the ALJ found with record support that this actually happened in Wisconsin when Bill Palmer got the bid that she proposed and made the determination, yes, I'm going to hire her for this particular location. And that of course, is a factual determination. Additionally, with regard to the six-month provision, which I think Mr. Elliott discussed in his opening, it's our position, essentially, that and the ALJ found that claimant was not present for employment-related purposes within 6 months of the work injury. So in the underlying case, the claimant never argued that the ALJ's decision lacked substantial evidence. So basically, their argument is essentially that the ALJ misinterpreted the statute. But in the event that you agree with the ALJ and the ICAP's determination, I think claimant waived her argument that there lacks substantial evidence. And even if she did not waive that argument, of course, there is substantial evidence to support the ALJ's finding in this regard.
Well, let's take a look then at the second part of this whole issue, which is that provision in the statute that says it's applicable only to those injuries received by the employee within 6 months after leaving the state.
Mm-hmm.
And that, as I'm sure you would agree, is sort of construction of the statute. It looks to me like a legal question there and not a factual question, to which we would defer to the ALJ. Would you agree?
I agree that legal questions are reviewed de novo and factual determinations are reviewed for substantial evidence. Yes. So in the event that you find that this is statutory interpretation question, you would be entitled to read that de novo.
Yeah. So help me with that soon.
Sure.
I'm looking at the statute. All it says, within 6 months after leaving this state, and it doesn't say within 6 months after leaving this state while performing work in this state.
Right.
So where did that come from?
Well, the history is kind of interesting. Originally in 1941, Mr. Elliott talked about kind of how that statute was initially come about and the purposes of the statute. So when you're looking at statutory construction, of course, your first duty is to effectuate the intent of the legislature. So the purpose of the statute was actually, and I disagree with Mr. Elliott here, he says it's to protect Colorado residents, but actually it's to protect Colorado employees who are hired in Colorado and then sent to work temporarily outside the state. That was initially, if you look at, you know, if you look at employer's liability and you look at Howington and you look at some of the other cases, they're going to talk about that was the main purpose of the statute. So what they didn't want happening was, you know, someone being hired in Colorado and then an employer sending them out to do temporary work with the unions or construction or whatever, and all of a sudden the claimant get injured and, oh, I'm sorry, there's no coverage, you know. That's kind of what they wanted to prevent with implementing the statute. The second purpose of the statute is actually to protect Colorado employers from having to go out and get workers' compensation insurance in all of these foreign jurisdictions. Again, both of these purposes would not be furthered by claimants' interpretation of what the statute is. Okay, so...
Okay, and obviously if we get to the purpose of the statute, that would certainly be a relevant consideration.
Mm-hmm.
My memory is that we have to start with the plain language of the statute, and I'm still looking at the plain language of the statute, trying to find that requirement.
Right, well, if claimant, see, and claimant argues that, oh yes, it's clear within leaving the state, but claimant's brief actually to the ALJ indicated that there are different potential interpretations of what this, of what leave means, right? So it could mean to bequeath by will, right? Well, that would be kind of ridiculous, but it could also mean to temporarily leave. It could mean to permanently leave. They admitted in their brief to the ALJ that there were actually different interpretations of what the word left meant and that it was unclear. So then that's when we get into the purpose of the statute, and that's when we get into kind of what the cases are saying after that. One of the other, I guess, rules of statutory construction is that a statute should not be interpreted in such a way to lead to absurd results. In this case, claimant is arguing that essentially the fact that she, assuming fine that she was hired in Colorado, which of course the ALJ did, and ICAP did not, but assuming you find that she's hired in Colorado, when you get to this section, essentially, claimant would have, Colorado would have continuous refreshed jurisdiction. Every time that the claimant came to Colorado for any reason, whether she was a resident or not, whether she did an hour of workbook training or not, every time she kind of steps into the state of Colorado to drive through it, to go to the Grand Canyon, to go skiing, that would continually refresh jurisdiction under Colorado workers' compensation. And that's an absurd result that I cannot imagine that the Colorado legislature intended.
Well, take out the driving piece and the flying over piece, and what about the workbook piece? What if?
Sure, yeah.
What if that's the only factor?
Well, if you're looking at, so what, one of the most, ICAP came out with a case, Rodenberg, which I attached to my, to my brief, which I think actually addresses almost this exact specific issue. It's an ICAP case, so an agency is entitled to deference of the statute that it, of interpretation of the statute that it administers, but of course you're not bound by that. But this was almost the exact situation where you had a gentleman who was hired in Colorado and then immediately went to Idaho, and he was a lineman in Idaho. Now, he was injured in Idaho and then sought benefits in Colorado under the Colorado workers' compensation system. In that case, he testified that, oh yeah, I came back to Colorado for employment-related purposes a couple of times because I had to go and pick up these equipment and bring it out, but also I still lived in Colorado. So I came back to Colorado, you know, just for purely personal reasons. Well, I have said, you know what, because we can't determine when the last time you came back to Colorado for employment-related purposes, then you haven't established jurisdiction, and affirmed the ALJ's, overruled the ALJ's decision, I think, on that regard, basically indicating that without a determination as to the purpose of traveling back to Colorado, that there's no way that you could find jurisdiction in that case.
Is that what we have here, that you can't determine when the workbook was filled out and sent?
No, we have the workbook, but if you read the cases, it's talking about the purpose of coming back to Colorado. So for the workbook, it was an hour of workbook training per year, and she was paid for it. But the evidence demonstrated in that case that she could complete the workbook anywhere. There was no, she got it offline, you printed it offline. Most people completed it actually in their professional domicile offices or while they were on the road. She chose to do it in Colorado. Now, the employer didn't say, you can't do this in Colorado, but the employer wasn't receiving any benefit from her doing it in Colorado versus in Hawaii versus in China versus in all these other places that she actually testified she could have done the workbook if she wanted to. So it's really about, it gets back, I think, to the purpose of the statute, which is to kind of protect the employment relationship. Just because, you know, you come to Colorado and you make a phone call while you're on the ski slopes doesn't mean that the presence in Colorado is employment related or incidental to employment. You know, so that's how the workbook comes in. In this case, assuming that you take claimant's interpretation of the statute, every time an employer closed up shop and moved to a different state, they would have continuous jurisdiction over workers' compensation claims that these workers had, regardless of whether they had any additional contact with the state of Colorado, or even whether the employee had any additional work-related contact with the state of Colorado. If the employee moves to, let's say, in this case, Ms. Baldwin moves to Virginia, and then she comes back to, you know, Colorado to go skiing or to visit her grandma or for whatever reason, and then 6 months later she gets injured. Under her interpretation of the statute, this would be compensable, whether it happened 5 years from now or 50 years from now.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Ms. Baldwin remains a citizen and taxpayer of this state. That's this case. I've been doing these types of cases for over 22 years, and there's very few cases that ever come up about this extraterritorial jurisdiction. There's not a lot of cases out there. But the respondents and the employers focus on what they can do about this to avoid the result that we're talking about in this case, that Colorado clearly has an interest in seeing that its residents and citizens at least have the protection of their own Workers' Compensation Act when they temporarily leave the state and then come back to the state like she, Ms. Baldwin, does. It's simple. It's addressed by employers all over the place. I deal with over-the-road trucking companies all the time that are aware of the statute, aware of the potential consequences of the statute. They don't want Colorado law to apply. Sometimes they do, because we're not the best in terms of the benefits we provide around the country. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But if they want to make sure that the statute doesn't apply, they bring their people to their location in Nebraska. They have them sign their contracts there. They make the final acts there. They do the hired-in part in the state where they want them to be. Air Wisconsin, the airline, they could bring her to Virginia if they wanted that to be the case, and in this case would never have happened. And it's a simple, straightforward answer in this situation to that problem. Air Wisconsin could have easily done that same thing here if they want to avoid this problem. But if they're going to reach into the state of Colorado and hire our residents and citizens, they're subjecting themselves to jurisdiction under the Act, under the plain language of the Act, and everything else. Now, we're the ones who brought...
Pardon me, Counsel. I want to ask you about something you just said. They could have brought her to Virginia. What does that mean? How would they do that?
The employers that do it in the other cases I'm talking about bring their employees and say, the contract, we're not going to make the offer, we're not going to accept the acceptance anywhere other than your new domicile. We're going to bring you here, and this is where we're going to finalize the terms and conditions.
So they could have forced her to move to Virginia?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
They would bring her to her new domicile and have the finalization of the
She doesn't contract. Have a new domicile. That's what I'm confused
She
about.
Does have a new domicile for her work, and that's the term of art here. Her new domicile after 2006 was Reagan in VA, in Virginia. Right, Reagan National in D.C. that's covered by the Virginia Workers' Comp. That was the domicile for her work purposes. But she remained a commuting employee with as a resident and citizen of the state of Colorado. The domicile is a work term, not her home, not where she's living.
But you're just talking about, if you don't want to get dinged by the hired in Colorado thing, what you do before you hire somebody is move them to the, or you take them to Nebraska.
They do it, and they do it all the time. Companies that are aware of this do it all the time. If they want to avoid it. Some want Colorado law to apply because it's better.
You mean they actually I'm still wondering how
this is the word move, right?
To finalize the contract of hire without reference to this, all the confusing thing of domicile versus she remained
in
residences.
That's all I wanted to know.
The testimony of the Air Wisconsin representative at a hearing was this was not a termination. That's in the record. It's in our brief. It's page 164, I believe, of the record. It was not a termination in 2006 in a rehire. She was never terminated. So how does she get rehired?
Mr. Elliott, how about this notion that she could have filled out the workbook in any state or country for that matter?
Well, we don't dispute the evidence on that because Ms. Baldwin admitted that. But the fact of the matter is she did do the work in Colorado in February of 2008, within 6 months. We presented that evidence. We presented it as simply an alternative. And frankly, Judge, we did it because of all the confusion in the case law that all of these hired-in cases and these regular employed cases kind of mush into each other and they start talking about the same thing because they're not keeping clear the clear disjunctive in the statute. Hired in Colorado or regularly employed in Colorado. There is no basis in that first sentence of the statute to read any requirement into it about regular employment in a hired in case.
Okay.
And there's no basis in the statute anything other than the reading of the Supreme Court in employer's liability. And my time is almost up.
Your time is up, actually.
You've got 22 seconds. Go.
Okay.
It's running up. Your time is up.
Red, I apologize. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you, counsel, for your fine arguments today. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. That.